Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the main event of the evening. It's another edition of Highbury Squad. I believe this is number 42, but without Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell, here, we women have completely lost the numbers. We're never really good with numbers. We just like to spend numbers. But joining me today is my partner in crime, my podcast sister, Amanda. Hello.
Hello, Sophie. How are you?
That is a loaded question for an Arsenal fan this week, right? But I do. We have a great sub. So we're subbing KC's coming out of the game. Oh, he's not happy. He's shaking his head. But we do have one of our favourite friends of the show. And I would like to say someone who has been nothing but completely supportive to me since I moved to the States many, many years ago doing my old show.
World Football Daily
interviewed him many, many times. And he was actually one of the first bloggers and key influencers in the Arsenal sphere on what we call the internet. Welcome to the show, Mr. Michael Price from You Are My Arsenal. Welcome.
Hello, ladies. How are you? Well, you know, how many times have we talked about getting together, chatting, and the schedules never lined up. But thankfully, for a U.S. holiday and me taking some vacation, this all kind of worked out perfectly.
It did.
So I'm excited.
It's Thanksgiving here, Amanda. We're about to have Turkey Day and get our elastic pants out, is what's happening this week.
When is Thanksgiving Thursday?
Correct.
Thursday. Oh, yes. Lovely.
It's a bit late this year.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is late.
Yeah. But anyway, enough of the chit-chat, enough of the small talk, enough about Thanksgiving and the weather. This is probably my least favorite preparation going into Thanksgiving, you guys. But then again, as I mentioned to Casey and Amanda a couple of weeks ago, Michael, and to the guys on TalkSport the other day, my Facebook memories just keep reminding me of how bad Arsenal have been for the last 5 or 6 years. It's incredible that I see these reminders and it's the same thing over and over again. But I want to start at the most recent before we get into the debacle that is our club right now. The Southampton game, a team that Leicester City spanked, bitch slapped, taught a lesson, football lesson to 9-0. We could barely get to a draw. Yeah. Michael, I know that you are into the tactical side of things too, and you look at things from a different perspective. You're a referee, your sons play the game. I believe a goalkeeper probably could play for Arsenal right now. talk us through that game in particular and how alarming the result was, but more importantly, how shocking the performance was. What's your take?
Well, first, let me start. I am actually a licensed coach with U.S. soccer. So I do, that's where my background is in terms of coaching and tactical setup. But look, is it really a surprise? Is the match a surprise? I don't know that it really was. And I know everybody was like Southampton, but first of all, Southampton has been a bogey team for Arsenal for years now, but not at home. But given how we've been playing, I'm not completely surprised by the result. I was surprised that Emery opted to switch to the 4-2-3-1 at halftime. But when he's playing three at the back, and it just does not suit the personnel that we have, what did you expect? I mean, he's going to sit back and sit back against Southampton, against a team that literally has no defense, no defense at all. I mean, we talk about the Arsenal defense all the time, but the reality is this, is that Southampton and West Ham have worse defenses than we do. And we made their defense look outstanding because we couldn't muster chances. We weren't creating chances. And part of that for me is how Emery sets up. And I go back to, and I'm going to, full transparency, I've never been, Sophie, you and I have had this chat before. I have not been an Emery guy from day one. When he was appointed, I was like, okay, he's the coach. You got to get behind it. But I just never felt that he was the right guy for the personnel that we had at the club or for the club in general. And part of that was how he likes to set up. We have always been a strong midfield side. We've always had very good midfielders, and in some respect, I still think we do. I just don't think they're used correctly, and And I really feel that part of our problem is that he completely bypasses the midfield completely. So what's the point of having a player like Mesut Ozil on the pitch? What's the point of, you know, and I know Granit Xhaka is a point of consternation for people, but what's the point of having him there if you're not going to set him up to be successful? And playing three at the back or playing in a style that avoids the midfield altogether, because Emery has always been a coach who likes to just use the width, go up through the wide sides, and as we've seen at Arsenal, how many times do we cross it and try and cross it into the box, but there's nobody there? So this match was no surprise. I honestly thought going in this was a draw. I really did. I just can't see this manager coaxing a win out of this side.
Yeah, I was saying to Casey and Amanda in our WhatsApp group before I made my 4-1 prediction that I didn't feel like we were going to even win the game, and then I just wanted to start thinking positively. And I have something for you, Amanda, and this is something you and I have talked about a lot. And, you know, when people compare him to Wenger, people aren't saying they want Wenger back. But what we're saying is we're comparing him to what became the worst of Arsenal over the last few years.
Right.
Our possession under Wenger was 62%. It's now 57%. He has only had 10 clean sheets since he took over. That's 10 fewer than Wenger in his last tenure. Under Emery, we've faced 696 shots on target. Under Wenger, that was 576 in the same time period. Here's the most devastating statistic of all. In 13 matches, we faced 225 shots, which is an average of 17 per game. Against Wolves and Leicester and Southampton alone, we gave up 71 shots, which is 23.7 per game. And the most damning verdict of all is we've also conceded more goals than Newcastle, Crystal Palace and Bournemouth. Amanda, you were there. You were at the game. Talk us through it.
Well,
and those stats, babe. And I mean, those stats, do they not make you want to cry? Don't cry. Not on the show. But you can cry later when you're making chicken.
I've never wanted to go to football. I've had a season ticket since the year dot. And I remember the early 80s back at Highbury. And let me explain this, why it is similar, although it's worse now, is because back in the 80s, when half the ground was empty, we used to put our feet over the front, because obviously I was only a teenager then. We used to do the slow hand clap. We didn't have any expectations. Yes, the football was shit. Yes, the managers were shit. Yes, the players weren't world class. But we didn't have expectation. We just wanted to play better and be a better club.
Right.
That all changed mid-80s when David Dean brought Dennis Bergkamp. We had Bruce Rioch in. He went out and Mr. Graham turned up. And then since then, it has been all go. Now, we have such high expectations, paying the highest prices. I don't even know if it's in the country, but I think it is. We were sold a lie when we left Highbury. None of us wanted to leave Highbury. I was brought up there, and it was a special place. But they sold us a lie and said we would compete, and we'd be one of the biggest clubs in the world, and all this bollocks. Yeah, they bring in Wenger and we then get to see some of the best football we'll ever see. Can't deny it. The first 10-11 years of Wenger's tenure was phenomenal. And I remember someone saying to me, you don't appreciate what you've got. This football is phenomenal, but it was week in, week out. So you don't appreciate it. Winning leagues, the Invincibles, winning FA Cups, taking the piss out of Spurs, you know, competing with the Uniteds of this world,
the big winning a Champions League.
Yeah, you know, I went to that. So this is when it started to go wrong, really, wasn't it? Henry stayed a year too late, 2006, 2007, and then all of a sudden it starts to go wrong. And you know what? We can talk about Wenger and Emery till we're blue in the face. and it's all about opinions. No one's right, no one's wrong. In my opinion, he stayed too long, Wenger, ruined us, if I'm honest, and should have left when we beat Hull. I did not want him to go. Excuse me, sorry. I did not want him to go on a bad feeling. The man had changed our club after George Graham and brought me and us and millions of Arsenal fans the most amazing football. But sometimes you can outstay your welcome and sometimes it's time to go. And whether you agree that he stayed to help or not, he shouldn't have stayed. We missed out on Pep, Klopp, not saying they would have come, but you never know. And unfortunately, as time went on, it got very toxic. I don't feel Wenger played to our strengths. And unfortunately, you know, he walked away after, let me add this, earning near on probably £100 million. I don't actually feel that sorry for him. But then I wanted Wenger to go probably a little bit, a bit earlier than maybe most, I don't know. And then we come to Emery. Now, I was at the supporters event last summer, not this one, the one before, when he was signed. Yeah, that's right. And he came on stage and he was full of hope. He was a lovely man. Can't take that away from him. And I really had high hopes. And, you know, I get idiots on social media saying anyone but Wenger. I don't remember ever saying that. I felt we needed to change. And up steps Emery, who, if I'm honest, hardly had heard of him. But I'd never heard of Arsene Wenger, so I didn't really care.
Well, Arsene Wenger, yeah, but yeah, go on.
I hadn't in the 90s. I hadn't heard of him. But then I wasn't into European football so much. So I'll never deny it. I'll never say, oh, yes, I knew who Wenger was and I knew who Emery was. Someone said to me, not a bad coach, Emery. I'm not sure he'll fit Arsenal. And I went, well, we never know. Anyone coming in, it's going to be tough. And then let's just fast forward, yeah. We had that 22-game run. I thought this is great. We're getting our Arsenal back. We're getting we're starting to win. But I don't think he even knew then what his best 11 was because he kept changing it at half-time and we kept winning. So no one was disputing that, not even me. I wasn't. But I remember the ref, who is a friend of mine, saying to me, Amanda, this isn't good that he keeps changing it every half time just because you're winning. He should know the tactics. He shouldn't be. And I was like, no, this is brilliant. Wenger never changed it till 69 minutes. We used to lose. Now we're winning. And I didn't really see what he was saying until now. Yeah. And now let's just jump forward. We all know where we are. I don't know. It's not like Wenger in or Wenger out. Most people want him out. I don't know anyone that wants him to stay. I don't. And I feel bad because I think he's a very decent man. I think his heart is at the club. I think the job's too big for him. I think everything's too big for him. And I personally, and Mike, you are a football coach and I'm not, nowhere near one, right? I don't understand what he's doing. I don't get the Ozil stuff. And as everyone knows, I think he's great and I want him on the pitch every game. I think with Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe on form, we should be on fire with Ozil. But he ended up playing Ozil finally and dropping Pepe.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a big – sorry, Mike. I'm not a big tactician. Trust me. I go to every match and away matches and stuff. And I've been going many, many years. But even me, as a basic football fan, sits there and goes – okay, you haven't played Ozil for months. We played Pepe every game. We didn't get any service. Now – you're playing Ozil, brilliant, but you drop Pepe. Mm. So let's just go up to this game. Sorry, I have gone back a bit. I go to the match this weekend. You know, if I'm honest, I don't care if anyone has a go at me. I didn't want to go. I actually think it's a chore at the moment. And it's not because I'm precious and I think we deserve to win. I think we deserve to have a go. Okay. I think he deserves to play the best 11, the first 11, the 11 that can actually maybe even attempt to win a game at home at the moment. Someone said that we haven't won a game for 50 days. I can't even remember what game we did win. We've just drawn so many. And if I'm honest, and that's never happened before, when Lacazette scored down my end, didn't even get up. I was so distraught that we were 2-1 down.
Yeah.
To bloody Southampton. No disrespect. We had lost 9-0 10 days before or wherever it was. And we are struggling at home. And on paper, Our players are okay, apart from some in defence, but they are. Holding and Bellerin need time to come back. Unfortunately, we haven't got time. We are playing like we're a relegation fodder, and now I'm off my soapbox.
All right, so let me switch it to Mike, because you raised some really good points. One of the things Amanda says, and one of the things that she and I differ on, Mike, is that as bad as Emery is, if you look at Wenger's last 2 years, mm-hmm. and from your put your coach hat on, we usually have KC put his player hat on, Wenger couldn't get a tune out of most of these players either. But somehow, this dude still found a way to qualify for top four, but he missed out on his, what, last three seasons, right? So my argument to Amanda is, yes, he gets it wrong. He doesn't help himself, especially with the talent base he has, because I think we've got some utter rubbish players, especially Sogradis, Kolasinac, Mustafi. We all know who they are. So help me understand how much of this is Emery's fault and how much of this is also player personnel fault.
All right. So my going to my, quickly on Wenger, I always felt that the problem with Wenger wasn't so much his man management. I think, and I think the players attest to that. His approach to player management and cajoling players along was fantastic. The problem with Wenger to me always was, is that the game had passed him by in terms of tactical preparation and understanding. I personally think that the best type of coach out there, and we'll look at Klopp and Pep for this, are coaches that blend great man management, positive and negative man management, and tactical preparation and understanding, right? Wenger was great at man management, tactical preparation. I always felt in the waning parts of his years where teams were able to game us a little bit better, he wasn't. He was always about here's my system of play, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, and let the players play. Let them be creative. Let them solve the problems on the field. And that's great to a certain point, but the way the pro game is now, you also have to have tactical preparation. Let's take it back to Emery. Emery came in with the being called a tactical coach. I'm not so sure that that's the true. He has a system that he believes in. I'm not so sure it works at this level. He's still not showing me that he's tactically prepared. I mean, all these – I don't know if you guys all saw the stories today about his video preparation and whatnot and how he does it all himself. I want to know really what he's doing, because to me – what I don't see, and I use the story of West Ham last year where we lost it. Was it 2-0 at the Emirates that we lost to them? Or was it a draw? Anyway, we had played West Ham at the beginning of the season and we struggled. And you'd think that if you are a coach who watches film, you would understand where you struggled against an opponent in a previous tie and you would game and prepare your team for that weakness. I didn't get that sense. And I think I'm starting to see it again. I'm seeing it again. I don't know what he prepares for. How do you not know that Southampton isn't going to, that has weak defenders, that they can get pulled out of position? How do you not know that if you have, you know, all this tactical preparedness that he supposedly has? Now you combine that with the fact that he clearly is not a good communicator. And can't communicate with his players. I mean, there's a story running on Twitter right now about where they're talking about Julian Draxler, where he was saying, I couldn't communicate with Emery. And that seems to be a constant problem. I don't doubt, and going back to Amanda's points on being a nice guy, and I get that general sense about him. I just think that this has been this is a league that he's not good enough for. And B, this is a team, and I think PSG was also a team way out of his league. The benefit he had at PSG was the fact that his owners bought these fantastic players that could make winning the league a walk. But if you ever noticed, he could never advance that team past the last 16 in the Champions League, and they even struggled a little bit in the group stages. I just don't think – I don't think he's a tactical manager. I think he's not prepared. He doesn't understand how a game goes. And go back to that point about Amanda about the halftime switches. I know last year people were all excited. Oh, look, a coach who's making a switch at halftime. If you have to make that switch at halftime, it means that your setup at the first half wasn't the right setup, meaning that
you weren't prepared. Yeah, my friend said that. That's exactly what you said, Mike, and I couldn't see it until now.
You're not prepared if you have to make that switch so quickly at halftime. I'm surprised at this point that he hasn't made a switch in the first half. It was clear last week against Southampton that sitting back with the three attackers wasn't the way to go. I would have literally switched to that 4-2-3-1. I would have switched to a 4-2-3-1 the minute I found out that we weren't getting the ball forward, you know, and we were seeing less and less of the ball. And you notice that once he switches to the 4-2-3-1, at halftime against Southampton, he puts Pepe out there. He's got Mesut Ozil. One of the things I noticed about Mesut Ozil's best, and I understand people, I absolutely understand why people don't like Mesut Ozil, because he really does not show himself like an aggressive grab the match, but that's never been his game, even at Real Madrid. What he's good at and when he's his best. Think about that year that we had Santi Cazorla and him playing, and even actually you had Coughlin as the holding midfielder in this role. You had Santi Cazorla playing the deeper role, getting the ball from the center backs or from the fullbacks or even the goalkeeper, and making and beating that first press, right? And then you have Mesut Ozil, who was floating in that space between the opposition midfield and back four. And that's where you want him. You want him floating in that space, looking for those gaps where he can get the ball and a runner makes a run and he can make that pass on it. And Aaron Ramsey in that one year was the benefactor of those passes from Mesut Ozil. Against Southampton, he had Torreira playing back, Guendouzi playing in that box-to-box role, and now Mesut Ozil at the 4-2-3-1 is playing as a 10, and he's moving in those spaces. He's starting to get on the ball more. He's not having to drop deep. And one of the worst things you could – if you want to watch Mesut Ozil at his worst, watch him when he's forced to come deeper into our defensive third and get on the ball, and you force him to dribble against the defender. If you make Mesut Ozil have to take on a defender or a pressing midfielder 1v1, I guarantee you Mesut Ozil will lose that battle because it's not his game. His game is finding space and making that pass. There is a reason Cristiano Ronaldo loved him. It's because he would find that space, and most likely for Real Madrid, finding the space out wide and then getting the ball into Cristiano Ronaldo making a run.
I felt like Oba and Laka, I actually thought Ozil going forward in this match was like, wow, this is the things I love about Mesut. Mm-hmm. No one was on his wavelength last weekend.
No.
They can't think when he's in that mood and he's playing that way and he's thinking two passes ahead, that no one could keep up with him. Aubameyang was completely out of that match, but go on.
That's a great point, Sophie. And think about this. You know, you're asking me about tactical setup, and look, the best guy out there to talk tactics is Clive. I still consider myself a neophyte when I talk tactics. But I think it's partially because they're not prepared to. They don't train to play this way. They don't train to have Mesut Ozil in that space. You know, and really what you want is Mesut Ozil getting the ball and one of those forwards or the outside forwards making a run against his movement. So if Mesut Ozil is getting the ball, let's say he's out, he's in the half space out on the right and he gets the ball. And then you want your left wing and your striker running in opposition to him behind the center backs so that he can put that ball into that space. You don't see that movement from our forwards when Mesut Ozil got the ball, which means to me that that's not what they're training. I am a youth soccer coach. I am not a pro. I coach high school. I'm actually, you know, but that's how I train. Those are the things that I look for. And it just doesn't seem like that, you know, okay, fine. You switch to the 4-2-3-1. But it doesn't really seem that that's what you're training or playing through the midfield is definitely not something that they do. And they're instantly look at how much joy Kieran Tierney got going down the left wing. And even for Bellerin, as I think Bellerin still looks labored right now, but he was getting, you know, forward, and everything is trying to go out wide. So having a player like Mesut Ozil is useless. It's useless for him.
And it sets Meza up to fail, which then, you know, and again, I've been very critical of Meza, but he is the type of player that you have to play. He's the type of player you build a team around and a system around.
Yeah, you do.
And that's not what we've done. So he's been set up to fail. He's been exiled. And for the right reasons initially, you know, in terms of his lack of training and his enabling and the way Wenger enabled him too.
Right.
So let's move on a little bit from the Southampton game, because what we saw is who we are. We are who we thought they were. Was that the Cardinals coach, Michael, that said that?
It was Dennis Green.
Dennis Green, that's it.
Dennis Green of the Vikings.
Yeah, they are who we thought they were. So we are who we think we are. And I think Arsenal fans are now very much in tune with who we are as a club, which is not the club that we were. And I said to Amanda and Casey that, you know, Arsenal, the brand, the club, the football, we knew it, died the day we left Highbury. And we came into this new universe, and we've been through a lot. And now we have Emery. And mostly, as Amanda said, fans want to see him go. And Amanda, we've seen the We Care Do You movement gain some traction again in the last few days, to the point where the John Crosses and the Henry Winters of the world have acknowledged it. I know that we three, and Michael was also part of the original messaging that came out in the summer. We were all very much of the ilk, and we believed in what that message was. Do you really think, guys, that this is going to change anything? Amanda, I don't know what you think. I know there's some things on social that you've kind of been perturbed about too. When you have an owner like Kroenke, how is this going to change? And I think we've all heard rumors this week that Emery was pretty much, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And now we're hearing that the issue is severance. How much do you think this We Care Do You movement will ignite Josh to come out, or for the club to make a decision this week that most of us heard would be happening?
Can I jump in on that real quick? And Amanda, I'll get off real quick to let you answer, because I know you've got, but I want to kind of, and Sophie, you're going to know this from here in the States. He did not care one iota about the fans in St. Louis when he moved the Rams from St. Louis to Los Angeles. He cared about the money. That is a $2 billion TV market. That's why he made the move. Stan does not care about the fans. He will do what he feels is the best for his investment. And if that means playing mediocre, I personally think that's the mindset, right? And there's plenty of experience for that. So I'll just say that before.
Yeah. Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts with regards to, number one, We Care Do You? Do you think that it matters? Because I agree with Michael. You know, living here in the US, Stan Kroenke has pretty much destroyed the Colorado Rapids. The LA Rams had their asses handed to them on a plate last night in Los Angeles at home, and I felt like I was watching Arsenal. Here's a team that was in the Super Bowl last season, and they look a shadow of the team, and they're building this grand stadium and everything. And maybe it's a simple thing to make a managerial change, but when you're dealing with someone who all he cares about is money, talk me through what your thoughts are on all of that, and how we go from here, and if you think that movement really can ignite a response from the Kroenkes again.
The thing is, the We Care Do You has to happen. And whether it changes or not, people feel like they need to do something. And we're part of that from the Highbury Squad as well. I believe in it. I believe that it's a way forward, just to show this man who, as you've just explained about what goes on in the States, couldn't give a flying. If he couldn't care less about his own team in the States, he ain't going to care about a little team in North London, is he? That's for sure. You know, we need change from bottom to top. The manager, the board, and the owner. We may be lucky if we get one of them. There's been rumours going around the last 48 hours that, as you said, don't let the door hit you on the way out. But nothing's happened yet. I don't know what to say. I feel
what does a new manager do with this team, though? Like, let's just say
Fred... I don't think this team is that bad. I think on paper, if you look at each player, apart from two in defence, if you look at each player, we've got a good squad. Look at the kids. Brilliant. But we need a man that can inspire them.
Now, are you saying that because of what you see with Lampard? Are you saying that because you've seen what's happened?
No. I see what I see when I see on the pitch and I watch these players, and we all do. Doesn't matter whether you're there or not. You can see what I see. But I just truly believe every single one of their confidence is knocked. Listen, what happened to Xhaka could have affected the team, right? They probably blame Emery for hanging him out to dry, to be honest, because played him in the wrong position for God knows how many months. He is not a DM. Torreira is a DM. But he doesn't play him in the right positions. And this is what I'm saying, Mike. It's not rocket science, is it?
No.
And I'm not even a manager. I'm not being funny. I'm really not.
No, you're right. Yeah.
So, and that's where I find people in this world mental. Because it's black and white. He is not a DM, and he is. So play him in that position. So, going back to it, Cronkay couldn't give a flying. The board, well, they don't... Don't even start me on them. And Emery. I feel sorry for Emery. I think he's a decent chap. I really do. I've got no issues with him. He just shouldn't be Arsenal's manager.
He's punching. He's punching, isn't he? He's punching about his weight now, and we're seeing it.
To be fair, anyone coming in after Wenger was going to be tough. You look at United, it's the same thing. You know, these managers, these stalwarts, I think the word is, they stay, they're massive Ferguson, Wenger. I mean, that's who I grew up with, in a way.
So was he set up to fail then? Do you think people like Moyes and Emery were set up to fail?
No, it wasn't. It just isn't good enough. You know what? I work in very, you know me, black and white. He's just not good enough. He may be good enough for another team, but he's not for us. We are a big club with a big squad, with a big fan base, right? And all we don't expect to win cups. That's not that I would love it. But that's not what we're saying. We just expect to play the right players in the right position and have a man who is a coach that coaches them in the week properly. Now, if he's lost the dressing room, which it does look like he has, yes, of course, the players have to take some blame. Obviously, over that white line, it's down to them. But you don't give up. And I'm not being funny. And I mean, I love Aubameyang, but where's he been lately? Lacazette was the only one that tried against Southampton.
No, Ozil did too. I was shocked.
Hold on.
Ozil.
Wait a second. Ozil, I was going to get to him a sec. Ozil's not stopped since he's come back. All right. So I'm just saying what I saw on Saturday. Let me go through it. Aubameyang, don't even know where he was. Lacazette worked his socks off. Ozil really tried to create something. Torreira was everywhere. I have an issue with Guendouzi, but I have since day one when everyone was raving about him. I think he's been overplayed. I think he's overrated. I am sorry, but I do. I think he's got massive potential, but it's not there yet. So we've got an issue going on here. We've got Bellerin, who's not fit. You've got Holding, who's not fit. Leno, I'm okay with Leno. Got no issues with him. And I feel, do you know what? I was looking at Tierney because in the first half, Tierney's runs up and down the line in front of me. I thought, what must he have thought he's joined? You've got Xhaka and all that issue. You've got Emery. You've got boos from the crowd at full time. For me not to get up when Lacazette scored, that's never happened before.
Yeah, I'd have been buzzing. I didn't even cheer either.
I would have been buzzing, Soph, because I'd have thought, give us a couple more minutes, we could get a winner here. And even a winner, what's it going to do? What, take us 2 points ahead of Spurs? Who cares about Spurs and the rest of them? You know, our club. Look, you've got to look at Spurs and what they've done. Pochettino won nothing. It was in 14th. They got rid. They brought in Mourinho. Whether we agree or not, I don't know if it's a match
great
made
move.
In heaven or not.
Great
I don't
move
know.
For them.
Well, that's what you think.
Short
I'm not
term.
Sure.
Short term
yeah,
is
short
a great
term.
Move.
I think I think they've both done it to suit their own purposes, if I'm
right.
honest. Daniel Levy purpose and Mourinho's purpose to get back.
Prepping for a sale as well. So
Amazon.
They're adding equity.
Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're adding equity in the Amazon documentary as well.
Yeah, there could be that. And then it could be a fact that he just said to him, listen, come for 18 months, let's see how it goes. Who knows? I don't know. Don't care about them. But my point is about Spurs is they've acted. Now, Pochettino is rated by most clubs and most club managers and most pundits. He just doesn't want anything. Okay, well, that's fine. I don't know many that don't. And I'd have him at Arsenal. I would, Mike. I'd have him because I think he's done well with Spurs with what he's got. Now, you know that any time a new manager comes in, the new manager bounced. Look at Mourinho. They didn't play brilliant at West Ham, but they won, right? We need something in now before it's too late. Do not wait till Christmas. Do not wait till January. Do not wait till April. It's too late.
Do not pass go.
Do not pass go. Do not.
Let me turn it back to Mike real quick. Mike,
yeah, I want to address
Amanda's issues, and then I want to get to the Obalaka situation.
I want to pick up on something that, you know, I have this theory about the hiring of Emery. There is a story that the Mirror had from an interview from Arteta in Spain. And I want to say the interview was this summer. And Arteta basically insinuates that he turned down the job. He felt that he owed City another year. The quote was, there's still work to be done. I just didn't feel I was ready. He talks specifically both about that and the Arsenal and the Newcastle job. And both saying, you know, at least for Arsenal, he really didn't feel he was ready. So my thought process is this, is that that forced a panic on Emery, on the club, and they went with Emery. And I think they hired Emery under this. We have a lot of fixing to do. We have to jettison poor contracts. We have to get rid of dead players. We have to bring in new ones and completely restructure how our players and to top it off, we have to bring in a technical director. So what if we got a coach in here who's maybe not the biggest, baddest coach in the neighborhood, but on the surface probably isn't going to hurt us and keep us exactly where we are while we right the ship and maybe our better options become available at the end of his contract. The problem is that Emery has turned out to be completely overmatched by the job. No fault to his own. He caught lightning in the bottle in Sevilla, right? But he was also fired, in Moscow, you know, before I think in the actual tunnel or something like that. There are a lot of signs here. That this wasn't going to work well for Arsenal, but I think he seemed to be the safe choice at that time, and it was like almost like do no harm. And last year he did no harm. If you really think about it, yeah, the end of the season was off. It was the warning signs for this season. But we stayed in the Europa League. We made the Europa League final, which I know a lot of people are making a lot of hay out. But the real part of it is it's one game better than that Wenger got. I mean, really, is that you're going to hold that over Arsene's head? But I digress. I just think this year the real issues with him show that even that do no harm was the wrong assessment. And I think what's happening now, and I think the reason he hasn't been sacked already, I know people are talking about his payoff. I really think what's happening is that the board is sitting there saying we can't, or Raul and the guy and Edu, and we can't get this next appointment wrong. We can't be out in the wilderness any much more than we are now. You know, we can't. You know, right now we're on course to finish.
We're irrelevant. We've become irrelevant. And that's my issue. And, you know, here's the problem. I don't want to see everyone lose their livelihood, but if Emery loses his, he'll be just fine. And he'll go on to another job. Arsenal Football Club have a long way back. And we've seen that journey since Wenger has left, you know, and Manchester United, Arsenal, how the mighty have fallen. It's happening to both. And it shows you the what happens when great leadership does leave, as much as we fell out of love with Wenger towards the end. But here's my biggest concern. Now we've got contract situations, and today's rumor mill is that Aubameyang and Lacazette, and the rumor mill at the weekend was that Laka and Unai had it out a little bit, and neither are committing. They want to play Champions League football. Lacazette was playing Champions League football with Lyon. You know, he joined Arsenal because he was sold a vision. And Aubameyang was playing Champions League football when he was with Dortmund, another player who was sold a vision. And here you have now, do you know what I found the most glaring, Amanda and Michael? Their handshake and their celebrating when either one of them scores is gone. They're not even doing that anymore. They've lost their soul. They've lost their enjoyment. Their smiles have gone. And even if we had tied that game maybe a month ago, I'm saying they're doing that celebration. So, Amanda, some folks are of the ilk of, if you don't want to play for Arsenal, then leave. But I think we all agree that Oba and Laka are integral to who we are right now and how we can maybe still build around them, because they both still have two or three really good years in them. If we don't make a change, what does this team look like next season, Amanda?
Championship?
No, come on. Everton and that, oh my gosh, you want to talk about history? The only two teams to never have been relegated from the old Division One and the Premier League, or never been relegated from top flight, are Arsenal and Everton. We're not getting relegated. There's no way that's happening.
We're playing relegation football at the moment, and if he doesn't make a change, I can't see us winning. I cannot see us winning.
Yeah, we're on course right now. I think I saw today there are two different accounts that said, one said we were on course to finish at about 48 points if everything were to stay the same. Another one said it's about 58. Well, that's, I mean, if you think about it, 40 points. Let's assume that one on 48 points was correct. 40 points is the relegation zone, you know?
That's shocking that we're even having this conversation.
I don't think the talent level is too great at Arsenal. I think ultimately the talent will win out. And honestly, Saturday is a perfect example of the talent getting Arsenal by, not the coach. And frankly, that's what's been happening this whole year. The wins that we've had and the draws that we've had have been because of the pure talent level that we have available to us. And that's why I think the coaching switch is so important. Coaches, almost one of their biggest remits is setting your players up for success. And I love the point you made about not shaking hands, the joy. It does not look like anybody on that field is enjoying the game. Mm. And let's remember, yeah, it is a game that men get paid a lot of money to play, right? But it is a game, and there should be a level of enjoyment to it when you're out there. And it looks labored. It looks, and those two just don't look like they have any sense of desire.
No, there's nothing. It's gone. And before we get to the game on Thursday, and sorry to interrupt, but there's so much that we want to talk about and squeeze in, right? So if we make a change, I think for the rest of the season, with nothing to lose, we give it to Freddie and we plan. We plan for next summer. We plan and bring someone in and know who that person is now. Give them time to use all of these months to plan what Arsenal are going to be. One of the reasons why my cousin George doesn't go to the games anymore. He goes, I don't know who we are. I don't know where I belong. I don't know who my club is. I can't support something I have no identification with anymore. And that is a huge, huge problem. So Amanda, I go to you first. I gave you and KC the job last podcast to make a decision. If he goes now, what do you do? Who do you bring in? Do you give it to Freddie? Do you get your guy now? What are you doing? And then, Mike, I want to know the same from you.
Okay.
I actually go to Mike first. I'll be interested to hear what he says, because I know what I would say, but let's see what Mike says.
Go on, Mike. Put your sporting director hat on.
I think immediately I want to make the change immediately, so I would make the change now. I would have Freddie, even on an interim basis, with a chance to audition for the job. If he can get some responses out, he gets the ability for the remainder of the season. But then I would, my looks would be, and I'm not of the, I want young and dynamic. And for me, my choices are Patrick Vieira. I do what, I mean, my preferred choices do everything, move high, to move mountains to get Julian Nagelsmann here. But that's never going to happen at this point. So it's Vieira. It's a look at, I do believe him. They're going to, I think it's going to be Mikel Arteta, who's one of the candidates that I would do. I'm not so sure about Allegri. I have questions about Allegri. I know he's got a pedigree, but there are some questions. If we have communications issues, but I'm sure he'll get a look. I think Vieira, Freddie, Allegri, Arteta, that's your pool. One of those four will wind up being the next Arsenal manager.
Amanda?
I'd like to see, I know he's not a proven coach or anything, but I'd like to see Arteta. Allegri would obviously be my first choice. Freddie and whoever else, I'm not so sure about. But if it meant that it would lift the club a bit, then I'm okay with that. It's a risk. It's a risk. That's all I'm going to say. But is it any more of a risk than what's going on now? Who would you have, Soph?
So what I said to Paul Ross on TalkSport last night, I said, right now I would just get rid of him because we can't afford to lose the passion and enthusiasm on the pitch with the players anymore because they're losing their will to live. They cannot play for this man any longer. So I would give it to Fred. I wouldn't do what Man United did. I wouldn't give Freddie the job long term. I would give it to Freddie and have him manage it for now with someone like a Pires or a Bold. And I know you're going to scream at me saying Bold, but it just needs organization. It needs people that know the youth players, people that can give the confidence back to the Willocks and the Sakas. Look what we've done to Saka. I mean, we just destroy players. We're destroying them. So for those reasons, he has to go now. And Arteta has been a tutor under Pep Guardiola for the last two seasons. And this year, he's also actually been the calming voice on the sideline. Pep's been going crazy and Arteta's been the one who's been calming him down. And he's also taken over a lot of the decision-making in certain games, especially in the cup games. So I think that if we're looking to kind of have a Pep at Barcelona, a Conte at Juventus, a Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid, why not give it to Arteta? Also, my cousin's kids went to school with Arteta and he's an amazing person, a great human being. He's a classy guy. He's someone that will make Arsenal Football Club proud. He'd represent them proudly and he will always do the right thing. But he's also going to take risks and play football in a way that we want to play. And I think being under Pep, he'll learn that. I agree with Michael. I'm not super sold on Allegri. There's something about him having failed in those four Champions League that makes me think he's not a closer. A little bit like Emery's collapse against PSG in that Barcelona game. And then when you look around at like that everyone's talking about the Leipzig guy, the Ajax coach, is that really the right move? I'm not sure. Patrick Vieira, who I interviewed a couple of times here, I'm not even sure he's the right move. Would I have him involved? Yes. But if you really want to grow the team again, rebuild the team again, you go balls out to go and get someone like, and people talk about, well, Diego Simeone isn't an Arsenal guy. Who is an Arsenal guy? Who are we? What have we become? Who do we want to be? We don't even have a style or culture anymore. So I feel like it's the opportunity for a really good manager to come in and truly change things. And, you know, for me, I would go after someone like him. I would try it. We have nothing to lose at this point because I feel like we're building a new identity. So all I know is that for a few games, Freddie can take over. And I may even allow that to ride till the end of the season, but make it say, we're not giving him the job. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to find our guy and we're going to rebuild and have a plan. And I think one of the things Arsenal haven't had is a plan. Raul sold us a story in the summer. He's kind of backtracking from it. And I don't know why he and Adu are protecting Emery so much, because he's not even their guy. They didn't even hire him. So it should be an easy decision. But what are we doing? We're haggling over money right now because we're cheap. You know what I mean? So that's what I think. Now, moving on from that, and we're going to close up here in a little bit. I wanted to go to what I thought was, you know, kind of cheap from Sky Sports. As much as you don't like Emery, and as much as, you know, he's not doing a great job at Arsenal right now, I can't believe that reporter hasn't been given a verbal or written warning by his employers for what he did to Emery in that press conference. I thought that was a cheap shot, Amanda. What did you think?
Unprofessional, disgraceful, and disrespectful to a man whose second language is English and he's trying to speak English since day one, and even told us that 18 months ago that he was heavily learning. And I think, you know what? He doesn't deserve that. He really doesn't. And I was really angry. Everyone seemed to be angry about the disrespect shown to him from Sky Sports. Seriously?
Yeah.
It was a cheap shot, right, Michael?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't have a lot to say about it. I don't like to validate things like that. And well, you can remember something, and I think this goes broader to even the stuff around Xhaka. These are people. Yeah, they're extremely talented people that make a lot of money. But I mean, come on, really?
We haven't won a game since Xhaka hasn't played.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it's funny because I'm reading something online right now that I guess there was a school that Emery was supposed to speak at this Friday, but they canceled the event because of verbal abuse that Emery was getting. So, you know, look, there is the evil side of social media. And I work, you know, outside of coaching, I work in marketing and advertising, and clients all the time talk about, hey, should I go on social media? And I said, well, you've got to be prepared to take the good with the bad, you know, because the bad is pretty bad. So,
yeah, it's pretty toxic, and it's been toxic, and I know lots of different people have been blamed for it, but this is why I feel like just getting a few ex-players together for the rest of the season. But here's the scoop. There's a lot at stake, isn't there, guys?
Yeah.
We've got to qualify for Champions League football. If we don't, we could lose Oba. We could lose Laka. You know, that's, you know, fiscal, that creates fiscal issues, investment in the team, players who won't want to come to play for us because we don't have Champions League football. I don't think they were able to sell that vision and that story the way we did to Oba and Laka, because there just isn't one. Yeah. So with that said, we go into another fantastic Thursday night of football.
Woo!
Woohoo! Which I hear very few fans, Amanda, are going to show up to. Are you going to the game on Thursday night?
No, but not for that reason. I've got a wedding on Thursday. One of my very closest friends is getting married.
Who gets married on a Thursday?
Everyone keeps saying that to me. It's her second wedding, and I'm very excited. The only thing is, he's a mad Tottenham fan, and I mean mad. So I'm assuming there'll be some references about Champions League, God knows what else. So I won't be there, but I was going to go. Yeah, I would have gone. Considering we haven't got a match the weekend, and it was Frankfurt, it was the only Europa League I wanted to see. So no, I won't be there.
So if you weren't going to the wedding, you were actually going to go to the game.
I was, yeah, I was going to go.
One of the few.
Yeah, fancied what going out.
Okay, all right. So let's do some fun predictions with Michael, shall we? And and see where our football crystal ball lies. What say you about the game on Thursday, Amanda?
We're going to win 2-1, and he don't play, he mixes it around, doesn't he, with the kids and stuff, especially without the League Cup now, especially now, but this is his only way of getting in the Champions League. Can you imagine us being 15th and in the Champions League? It'd be quite funny. Well, it wouldn't, but you know what I mean. I think we're going to win 2-1.
Okay, Mike, what's your prediction?
We're going to lose 3-1.
Ouchie.
I think, yes, it's going to be a predominantly youthful side, which may give us some energy that we don't have. I just think the setup's going to be all wrong again. And yes, I know it's Eintracht Frankfurt, but if you remember while we did win the last match, they got at us. They threatened us. You know.
Yeah, they did. As have many teams this season, including 3-1.
I'm not optimistic. I'm really not.
Yeah, I think we'll lose 2-1 as well. I don't feel optimistic at all. If we can't beat Southampton with a full strength team, you know, Frankfurt, you know, playing against the kids, I think they'll take advantage of us. So we'll lose that one. Now, let's get to the big one before I get you kids out of here so you can enjoy the rest of your Taco Tuesday. Mike, you first on Norwich. Ooh, Norwich just beat Everton, and Everton have been great at home, and they beat them away from home. And that game could have cost Marco Silva his job, but I hear that he's survived to manage one more game against Leicester this weekend. Norwich against the Arsenal.
We're away to Norwich.
We're away, yes, we are.
Which means, again, we have to caveat this because could very well be a different manager on Sunday. If they lose on Thursday. But assuming it's Emery, I'm still not hopeful. I think this sets up, actually, the way Emery's been setting us up plays right into Norwich's hands. And I, 2-1, them.
Amanda, what does Mystic Man say? What does she see in her crystal football?
On Sunday, if Emery's still in charge, we'll lose 2-1. I agree, Mike.
If Freddie takes over the team for the weekend,
we'll win.
Yep.
We'll win. Anyone that comes in, we'll win.
They're going to get that. Look, the players are just going to, if you make that switch by Sunday, before Sunday, doesn't matter. You're just going to get it's going to be like a lifting of weights off of guys. And I think it's just going to let them play. I think what will happen is, let's say it's Freddie. Freddie's going to adopt a little bit of Wenger approach here and just say, you know what? I'm going to put you out as a 4-2-3-1. Just go play. Go play the way you want to play. And I think that frees them.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Emery's still there, we lose 3-1. I think if he's not, we get a bounce and we get a 2-2 or a 3-2. But either way, something's got to change. Something's got to give. Something has to be done. And I think we all agree. We live in hope that it will be. But my goodness, I don't know. In my time, I've supported Arsenal. I don't think I've ever felt this deflated being a fan. Yeah. I know Amanda lived through the dross in the early 80s. And that was pretty bad, wasn't it, Amanda? But this feels hopeless right now. It feels like there's no one navigating the ship. And, you know, we're about to hit like that big wave that George Clooney did in A Perfect Storm. So I live in hope.
I got one last question for Amanda before I leave. Who was worse out of the three? Terry Neal, Bruce Rioch, or Unai Emery?
Wow. God. Oh,
wow.
Right. Terry Neal just edges Emery, but not far. Emery and then Rioch in that order.
That's kind of where I was.
Yeah.
And no. I did not see Arsenal play under Terry Neal. I've caught some of the history. yes.
I remember a player, Mike, called John Devine. And that's how old I am. Yes, I'm 50, people. It was so bad. It was so bad. He makes Mustafi look good. Sorry. Moving on.
Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Well, look, let's hope that there is change. I know that there's a lot of things a lot of us could say, and there's a lot of things people know. And at the end of the day, there's only one decision, and that decision has to come from the ownership and the board. So whatever we hear and whatever we know is a moot point until a decision is made. I do think every single Arsenal fan wants change. We're a football club that is in decline, but yet when you look at the kind of club that we are and the fanship that we have, not only back home, but also on an international level, we are still a big club, but we're a big club that is a little irrelevant right now. And it's very difficult pill to swallow to be this irrelevant. And when you look at its Champions League week on a Tuesday and Wednesday and that we're not involved and haven't been involved for the last 3 years, this could be our fourth year that we're going into where we're not involved in Champions League football. That's really hard. But most importantly, I think most Arsenal fans just want to be competitive in the Premier League again and be challenging. And I think that's the toughest part. So let's hope a decision is made and one that is in the best interest of the club so we can all unite again and really be proud about cheering our team on. And until then, Amanda, despite all the challenges, despite how upset we all are and how mad we are at the owners, there's only one thing left to say.
Always Arsenal!